Just 24 hours. That's all I ask.
No!
You do it for Randolph Scott.
Randolph Scott!
If you're the police, where are your badges?
Badges? We ain't got no badges. We don't need no badges. I don't have to show you any stinking badges.
Forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
I'm a man. Well, nobody's perfect.
Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night.
He wins, he takes the car. I win, I take his finger. Is that so strange?
Leiningen, you're up against a monster 20 miles long and 2 miles wide, 40 square miles of agonizing death. You can't stop it.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Round up the usual suspects.
Silent Breed is people!
Wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Welcome to Paleo Cinema Podcast.
Paleo Cinema Podcast is a monthly podcast alternating fortnightly with its stablemate, the Martian Drive-In Podcast. Paleo Cinema looks at movies more than 20 years old in a wide range of genres and tries to find the cool, obscure or forgotten cinema of the past and brings it to your attention. Feedback is important, so please leave reviews on iTunes, email feedback, either written or MP3 attachment, to cultguru@gmail.com. That's cultguru with a K at gmail.com. Or if you are in the USA, you can leave voicemails on area code 206-203-3299. This podcast contains coarse language and adult concepts, so you know it's going to be good.
How is everybody today? This is Terry Frost again, and welcome to Paleo Cinema Podcast number 112. It's still summertime here, which means that it's probably snowing in the Northern Hemisphere. But here, it's not too bad at all. It's going to get up to about 30 degrees today. Little bit overcast. Bushfires every now and then. Usual things you get in Australia at this time of year. The coffee of the day is St. Ali Red Bourbon coffee beans, which I recommend because they are really, really nice and are among the best coffee providers in Australia, which means it's among the best coffee providers in the world. I've also got some really weird little Asian corn snacks that I picked up from an Asian supermarket. It's kind of like crunchy corn, but it's got garlic and chili flavouring to it. I'm going to try not to munch that too much. Silver and gold seem to have the monopoly on noises being made with your mouth, apart from talking, in a podcast. So I'm not even going to try to go there. And I'll do a shout out to Alex and Zom while I'm thinking of it. So things here have been fairly okay. February's not been too bad. Let's see. I have watched a shitload of movies as well, which is always an interesting thing. I'm up to about 78 or 79 so far this year, and it's only middle of February, so I'm doing quite well as far as the tally on the films is concerned. And I have been working on the book, more of that, up to about 12,000 words. I don't know where it's going to go, and I'm going to probably edit out a whole bunch of stuff and compile a whole bunch of things because I find myself rambling with my fingertips. But in spite of that, I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and I really am enjoying the process of getting a lot of the things I've been thinking about and some of the things I've been talking about on podcasts down in text. So that's going ahead, and I am working on it pretty much every day. The audio on the podcast is going to sound a little bit different this time as well, mostly because I'm back to using the Samson Media Mic that I've got, the little USB one that sits on the desktop and looks like a kind of diesel punk marital appliance. I've kind of tweaked the settings on the Meteor a little bit to see if I can get a better sound quality. I think it sounds okay. It's a little bit echoey, but I think it's very much okay for podcasting. And given the fact that I paid about $100 for it, I might as well get some use out of it. Let's see. If you follow me on Mizo, under Cult Guru, you'll find out what I've been watching, pretty much most of what I've been watching on film over the past month. Just let me go back in there and I'll check it all out for you now and give you a few highlights, because I've just totally forgotten what I've watched, which is possibly a function of age or tiredness, one of the two. I did see Django Unchained, which is very, very cool. I've seen it twice, in fact. I saw it once by myself because I was going to be talking about it on the lunchtime radio gig in Darwin. And I've also wanted to see it with my mate Jamie, so he and I went and saw Django Unchained. And it's just as good the second time. I picked up a few little bits and pieces I missed. I figured out why Franco Nero was wearing white gloves in Django Unchained. And if you send me a message, I'll tell you what that is. I have mentioned it on Facebook, but I think it's a very cool thing. I did also see the Franco Nero Django, the Sergio Corbucci one from 1966, which is a very different film, but has a couple of little homages to it, apart from Franco Nero's presence, in Django Unchained. So I saw that, which was a lot of fun. I did see The Bourne Legacy with Jeremy Renner, which was an okay action film, but not really world-shatteringly wonderful. So I have checked that out. Let me just see what else I've got. I did see Seven Psychopaths, which had Christopher Walken in it, Colin Farrell, who I'm not entirely sure why he has a career, apart from the fact that he's Irish and he can look soulful at times. Recommend that one highly. It's quite a good little film. It's a meditation on storytelling as much as it is a story about seven psychopaths, which is kind of a bit of fun. I did see, let me have a look here, that I saw The Naked Spur. I've been watching some westerns, of course. I should say, this podcast, I am doing two of Bud Boudica's renowned cycle of westerns. The Seven Men from Now and Ride Lonesome. I'm doing those two because they're probably my favourites. But I have watched all seven of the renowned cycle westerns. Tall T, Seven Men from Now, of course, Ride Lonesome, Comanche Station, Buchanan Rides Alone, Decision at Sundown, and Westbound. So I've watched all of those now and enjoyed them thoroughly. I can understand why Martin Scorsese recommended them. I saw The Watch as well, movie about a neighborhood watch group of guys, which stars Ben Stiller, Vince Vaughn, and Richard Ayoade. And to be honest with you, it was okay. The problem I've got with the film mostly is it stars Ben Stiller and Vince Vaughn, who are two of the more annoying actors working in Hollywood at the moment. Both of them are incredibly charmless at the best of times. And Ben Stiller is... And this isn't particularly Ben Stiller's fault, I'll be honest about that. Ben Stiller's got this weird problem of being a short guy with an enormous head. And as he gets older, for some reason, and I don't know what it is, this becomes more apparent in movies, that his head is fucking enormous. It's like that kid in Say I Married an Axe Murderer. So I've got that problem. Richard Ayoade basically steals the movie, which is as it should be. But if you want to see it and you don't have too many expectations, you can go and see that and have a bit of fun with it. But also rewatched Attack the Block, which I find an interesting film and a lot of fun. I've got the Blu-ray, so I thought I'd crank it up. And yes, it held up well the second viewing. And it's one of the great action films of the last couple of years. It really does put it together. In a weird way, it's a good companion piece. If you're going to do a double feature, you could do a double feature of Attack the Block and The Raid and have a good night entertainment. Really, I like it a lot. And I like the fact that it's not just about the monsters. It's about living in a tower block and living under poor circumstances. And, you know, that the kind of arc that people have when they move from childhood into adulthood. There's a lot of good stuff about that in there as well, which I do think that it enhances the action in a lot of ways. A bit like in the first Die Hard movie, the family problems that John McClane has gives you a good context for the action. He's not just a cardboard cutout cop. He's a person as well. And I think Attack the Block's got a lot of that too. It blends character and action in a really interesting way with some very young actors who are very, very talented. So I won't talk too much else about what I've been watching because I've been just so into this Western Bud Boudica Western headspace that it's kind of pushed a lot of other things out of my consciousness to a certain extent, which is not a bad thing. I love being finding new things. And I'd heard by watching the Scorsese documentary on 100 Years of American Cinema about these Randolph Scott Westerns. But they hadn't really pinged my radar heavily until recently when I found out I could get them all illegally and just sat down and gobbled them all down and went, wow, these are a lot more than they should be. But I'm not going to talk too much about that just yet. I'm going to take a break now, and when I get back, we're going to look at chronologically the first of the renowned Westerns, Seven Men from Now, starring Randolph Scott, Gail Russell, and Lee Marvin.
Out on the plains, down near Santa Fe, I met a cowboy riding the range one day. And as he jogged along, I heard him singing a most peculiar cowboy song. It was a ditty he learned in the city. Come a ta ay come a ta yippee ay.
Get along. Get hip, little dog. Get along. Better be on your way. Get along. Get hip, little doggy. And he trucked him on down that old fairway, singing his cow-cow boogie in the strangest way. Coming to ya, ya, yay. Coming to yip till ya, yay.
Singing his cowboy songs, he's just too much. He's got to knock that Western accent with a Harlem touch. He was raised on local weed. He's what you call a swing half-breed. Singing his cow-cow boogie in the strangest way. Come at the aye-aye, come at the yippee-aye. Get along, get hip, little doggy, get along. You better be on your way, get along. Get hip, little doggy, as he tucked it on down the old fair way, singing the cow-cow boogie in the strangest way. Coming to ya, ya, yeah, coming to yip, to the ya, yeah. Singing his cowboy songs, he's just too much. He's got to knock that Western accent with a Harlem touch.
That cat was raised on loco weed. Jackie's what you call a swing half-breed.
Singing his cow-cow boogie in the strangest way. Come at the aye-aye, come at the yippee-aye.
Come at the aye-aye, come at the yippee-aye.
Get along, little doggy, better be on your way.
That was Ella Fitzgerald's version of Cow Cow Boogie from the 1940s. Very hip, very cool, very 1940s. Okay, let's talk about Westerns. I just read the listing in the new Biographical Dictionary of Film about Bud Boudica. The dictionary is written by David Thompson, one of the great film critics. And he makes a point, and this is a fairly strong assertion that he does make in the book. He says that the Boudica Westerns with Randolph Scott are among the best B films ever made. And to be honest with you, it's a big assertion, but I think it's a fairly accurate one. Now, it all starts out with a bullfighter called Oscar Bud Boudica. He he went through a few, he came from quite a wealthy family in the eastern part of the US. He went through college and a military school. And then when he went to Mexico, he saw a bullfight and he became fascinated with bullfighting. Lived down there for a little bit, learned a lot about being a matador. And in 1941, he was hired by Ruben Mamoulian as a technical advisor on a movie about bullfighting starring Tyrone Power called Blood and Sand. Now, Bettinger reckons that the only reason he got hired for the gig was that he was the only bullfighting expert who could speak English. Apparently, he wasn't very good at speaking Spanish anyway. So Bettinger stuck around Hollywood, became a B director in a number of films, and by the mid-50s, his career had kind of stalled. He'd done a few good things, but really not a lot that was really top draw. So he got hired by John Wayne's company, Batjack Productions, to direct a Western that was written by a guy called Burt Kennedy. Now, Burt Kennedy went on to become a director later on, but Burt Kennedy wrote four of the seven Westerns that Bud Bettinger was to do with Randolph Scott. And to be honest with you, there really are the four best ones out of the seven. Originally, Seven Men from Now was going to star John Wayne, but he was busy doing The Searchers at the time. And he suggested that Bettinger and the studio, Warner Brothers it was, hire Randolph Scott. Now, Randolph Scott's career had kind of stalled. It was in his late 50s. He'd been a kind of well-known actor, done a few things, but his career was, he's kind of on that tail end of the career. But strangely enough, these days, Randolph Scott's now known for the tail end of his career. The seven movies he did with Bud Bettinger and Ride the High Country, which he did for Sam Peckinpah along with Joel McRae. But the seven movies, which are now known as the Renowned Cycle, because most of them were done by Scott's own production company, Renown, the name comes from the RAN from Randolph Scott, and his production buddy, Harry Joe Brown, the OWN from Brown. So it's Renown, RANOWN. And the renowned movies are among the best Westerns ever made. They were made really quickly, all seven of them. They were made mostly on location on the eastern side of the Sierra Nevada Mountains. And they took 18 days to make it. They had a 3-week shoot with a day off now and then. And the whole lot would be filmed in 18 days flat, which is kind of remarkable. Making any movie in 18 days shooting is pretty good. None of them are very long. They run between 72 to 78 minutes. So they're definitely B pictures. But the reason I like them, having seen them, and of course they did get name checked by Scorsese, which is where they first impinged on my radar. The reason I like them is because they're Westerns condensed, in a sense. They're condensed. All the good bits are in there. They're not brief, and they have a natural length. I think if they were any longer, they'd be padded. But the thing I like is that they're kind of, you know how when you make a stock, when you're cooking, and you put all the vegetables in there, and you put a few meat bones and things, and then you rend it down. And then you rend it down again and you end up with a really thick jus. That's what this is. This is kind of a Western stock condensed down into an intensely flavored and perfect jus. So that's basically my Western cooking analogy for the podcast. And they are incredibly beautiful and really well done. Now, looking at the first one, and it's the first one and probably Wired Lonesome, all the ones that, as I said, all the ones that Burt Kennedy wrote the scripts for were the best of them. There are a couple of weaker ones, which would probably be maybe Buchanan Rides Alone and Westbound. I'll give you the seven names. I'll read them. I won't look at the paper. I'm going to see if I can name all seven renowned movies off the top of my head. Tall T, Seven Men from Now, Comanche Station, Ride Lonesome, Buchanan Rides Alone, and Westbound. There we go. Seven off the top of my head without looking at the notes. I test myself sometimes. So, Seven Men from Now being the first one is probably the one where the format, not necessarily a formula, but the format between Burt Kennedy, Bud Bedeker, and Randolph Scott first came about. Now, there is a really interesting quote from Burt Kennedy about how he made these westerns. Kennedy said, "The formula is a leading man who comes into a situation that is not his problem. He can walk away from it any time and finally stays there and solves it. And usually mine was a lonely leading guy who had lost a wife or something, which is always a good character. Not because you feel sorry for him, but because he doesn't feel sorry for himself. Usually tough guys won't tell up front what's bothering them." That's basically the Randolph Scott character in the Bud Bedeker Western. In Seven Men from Now in 1956, he plays a character called Ben Stride who walks into a desert cave encampment during a nighttime rainstorm. This is the first scene of the film, and it's strikingly good. He encounters two men taking shelter there next to the fire and asks to join them. Now, I'm not going to do a spoiler on that, but you see him come in out of the rain, and he's got his cowboy hat on. He's got Randolph Scott's fantastic stony face. And if the first scene you see Randolph Scott in this film, he looks like the cover of every Western novel you ever saw. It's an iconic image, and it's done really well. It was done on a soundstage, but it's one of the great momentary images of a Western film. The story of Seven Men from Now is pretty simple. I'll read you the IMDb bit. A former sheriff blames himself for his wife's death during a Wells Fargo robbery and vows to track down and kill the seven men responsible. That's a very simplified version of it. On the way, he does meet a man and his wife who are traveling by wagon to California, and they are, unknown to Stride, involved in his quest to find these men in an unusual way. The couple who are on the wagon are John Greer and his wife Annie, played by Walter Reed and Gail Russell. People might remember Gail Russell because she played Annie Oakley on television for a while there in the 1950s. And in the 60s here in Australia, Annie Oakley was on TV all the time. But I'll just play the trailer now. It's very bombastic and it's very 1950s movie trailer. But I'll play it for you just to give you a little bit of a feel for the film.
They say there are two things can force a man to any limits. Two things can drive him to the ends of the earth. Love and hate. He knew them both. Like burning brands lighting the trail of those he hunted. Seven men. Seven of the fastest guns in the West.
That killing. They ever catch up to them fellas that done it?
Two of them.
When you move, you look all over alive. And you speak soft and quiet. Kind of making a man wish you was talking to him. Nobody else.
Drink your coffee, Masters.
Leave him alone.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Just do as I tell you.
Maybe you better mind your own business. Unless, of course, Mrs. Greer in there is your business. That leaves five still alive. Unless, of course, you catch up to him.
And if I do?
Then all that stands between me and $20,000 is you.
So that's the trailer. You might have heard in that the main antagonist, Masters, is played by Lee Marvin, which is kind of cool. And this is before Lee Marvin got big. Now, the other interesting thing about the Bodeker Scott Westerns is how many people who became big there are in these Westerns. Any one of them, you can find people who are very cool playing the bad guys in them. In Seven Men from Now, you've got Lee Marvin.
In The Tall T, you've got Richard Boone, which is very, very cool. He's very good in that too. Let's see, Buchanan Rides Alone. You don't really have anybody in Buchanan Rides Alone, but let's see what else I've got. Westbound's an interesting one. Westbound, you've got Michael Pate, the Australian actor, playing one of the bad guys, which is kind of cool. Let's have a look here. And in Ride Lonesome, you've got Pernell Roberts, Lee Van Cleef, and James Coburn in his first movie, which is kind of good. Comanche Station, you've got Claude Akins, who went on to do a lot of good things. And, yeah, basically, there are a lot of actors who went on to better stuff just after they appeared in Bud Bediger Westerns, which is kind of cool and really the kind of thing that leads you to think that when it comes to picking people out for movies, he's quite good. Now, Gail Russell is the unfortunate person in Seven Men from Now. She died very early. She had a problem with alcohol and could only work in small bits. And Bediger was very kind of gentle with her. He wouldn't overstress her by getting her to work long hours. She'd work in small pieces there. She had worked previously about 8 or 10 years before in a John Wayne movie, and Wayne suggested her for the production in order to give her a go. But she was one of those people, and you find this through the history of Hollywood, where certain, particularly actresses, have incredible amounts of shyness and a lot of stage fright. You know, they're hired and they're recruited into Hollywood because they're pretty and attractive women. And she's not a bad actress, so I should also preface that. But they have that enormous stage fright, and some people unfortunately take to alcohol to deal with those problems. And Gail Russell was one of those people who did that. She basically was wrong. She was in the wrong job, in a sense, even though she did have a career for a certain number of years doing that. That shyness and stage fright and nervousness really were to her detriment, which makes her, in the renowned movies, probably one of the weaker female characters. The other female characters in it, played by a lot of other actresses, people like Karen Steele, who was in a relationship with Bediger for a time. Maureen O'Sullivan in The Tall T is a particularly good example of that. Let's see, Virginia Mayo is in Westbound, and she's quite strong in that. And probably the most interesting strong female character in any of them is Nancy Gates in Comanche Station, who's got her own story arc and her own reasons for being who she is, and she's got an enormous internal strength, which only comes out right at the end of the film. You understand where she's coming from. So I might do a spoiler on that, but Comanche Station I find one of the more interesting of the cycle, and very strong finish to it. So the female characters tend to be, with the exception of Gail Russell here, of course, tend to be very much their own people. They're equal to the men in the movie, not in gunfighting or fighting or kind of cowboy skills or anything like that, but just psychologically, they're their own people. And that's something Bediger in his personal life liked. He liked strong women, and in his movies he tended to cast for that, with the sole exception, of course, of Gail Russell, who's very much more a traditional kind of character. Now, as the story goes along with Seven Men from Now, of course, Stride does catch up with the Seven Men, but we then have the problem of the Gold and Masters, played by Lee Marvin, who is very fast with the gun. There's a couple of scenes you see of Lee Marvin practicing his gunplay, and he was quite quick with the gun. I'm quite impressed by it. In fact, there's a scene in a tavern cum brothel run by John Larch, another character actor that people have seen in a lot of things, where he's fiddling around with the guns. And Marvin was quite fast in that. And that's emphasized by Bediger too, so that when the confrontation comes right at the end of the film between Masters and Stride, Stride's already been injured. He's got a bullet in his leg, and also he's been beaten up as well, trying to grab a horse after he's been wounded, and the horse drags him for a period of time and he bashes up against a rock. So he's not at his best. And they film the shootout at the end really in an interesting way. I'm not going to do a spoiler by telling you how they shoot it, because it is quite important, but it's done really well. And as they say in the little documentary about Bediger that's attached to the DVD of Seven Men from Now, there's a really interesting death by Lee Marvin. Of course, it's not much of a spoiler to say that the good guy wins in these kind of westerns, but Lee Marvin dies really well. And, much to his credit, apparently he was known for dying really well in a bunch of movies before he became famous and ended up being the person who survives till the end of the film. But just to summarise on this one, the things I really like about Seven Men from Now is that iconic scene right at the start, which sets up Stride as a kind of implacable character. I do like the tentative romance between Annie and Stride, who have an kind of almost instant attraction to each other. And there's not quite a kiss and a clinch at the end of the film, but there's a bit more of a realistic ending to their story arc. I do like the way that's handled, that kind of tentative sensitivity, which really does work as both of their characters are a bit reticent for fairly obvious reasons. And I love, as I do with all of Bendiger's westerns, I love the use of scenery. The big tumbles of rocks, the things shot in the middle distance, the way he gives you a great sense of the space of the desert and of the West. He really doesn't do picture postcard kind of things the way John Ford did, but they're more realistic kind of images of the scenery. And one of the things about it is you can almost draw a map of the territory covered in a Bud Bedecker Western. That's such a strong sense of place and strong sense of geography, and the way the characters use geography to their own advantage. There are ambushes and things. In Bud Bedecker Westerns, the hero doesn't decide he's going to meet the guy face to face all the time. It's not realistic when there are 10 guys after you to stand in the middle of a great big valley and wait for somebody to come up so you can have it out with them. You use the landscape and you use guerrilla fighting to your advantage. And Bedecker was a Marine in the war, so he knows about this stuff, and he knows about tactics, he knows about using the landscape to your own advantage. And this really does show in these westerns that this countryside and the land is another character in the film in a very realistic sense, and I really like that. I think he does it better than pretty much anybody. Yeah, John Ford, with the saturated colours of his Technicolor films and the stark blacks and whites and the Ansel Adams kind of look to the black and white movies he did when he's out in the scenery are one thing, but I think Bedecker's stuff is more integrated with the characters. They're not the characters against a beautiful backdrop and against a landscape. Their characters very much part of the landscape, and Randolph Scott's kind of taciturn and craggy face blends and becomes a part of that landscape in a way that doesn't happen for other people. He's got a much harder face than even John Wayne has, and that works in that kind of terse way that he speaks, and the less is more acting that Randolph Scott does in these films really does work to their credit. When there are scenes where he does have to reveal something of himself and something of his past and something of his feelings, that reluctance for it to come out, it's almost like a trickle of water coming out between two rocks in a desert. There's that little pure stream of it coming out, and the fact that the character really is reluctant to speak about it and really isn't as articulate as a lot of other actors in a lot of other movies really does intensify that emotional moment in a great way. And I think Bedecker did that very, very well. So I'm going to take a break now, and then I'm going to talk about what some people consider the best of the renowned cycle westerns, being Ride Lonesome, starring Lee Van Cleef's in it as well as Randolph Scott, Lee Van Cleef, Karen Steele, James Best, and Pernell Roberts, and James Coburn.
I got off the riverboat New Orleans in the spring of 82. I walked into a gambling house, as gamblers often do. I had myself a drink, and I joined in a poker game. The dealer was a woman, so I asked her for her name.
She smiled at me so pretty, but a hush fell over the place as a big man crossed the table, stood up and slapped my face. Bowie knife, long glitter and steel. If my gun don't take your evil life, you can bet my Bowie knife will. I had my choice of weapons on which would depend my life. I chose a set of pistols and a long old Bowie knife. I met him by the river, by the light of the rising sun. Was I prepared to fight him? I feared my time had come. Bowie knife, a long glitter and steel. If my gun don't take your evil life, you can bet my Bowie knife will. As we stood back to back there on the dueling green, I cursed the fate that had brought me to the town of New Orleans. The referee started counting the paces one by one. When I heard him say 20, I turned and fired my gun. I knew at once I'd missed, and I waited there in fear as the stranger aimed and fired. But the bullet went by my ear. He threw away his pistol and drew his Bowie knife. I knew that razor edge would soon snuff out my life. But somehow luck was with me and my weapon found his side. He lay there on the dueling ground and he cursed me as he died. Bowie knife, a long glitter and steel. If my gun don't take your evil life, you can bet my Bowie knife will. You can bet my Bowie knife will. You can bet my Bowie knife will.
That was the unmistakable voice of Frankie Lane singing Bowie Knife. I just thought I'd throw in another Western tune there to get you in the mood for the next movie. I've been doing a little research while I was listening to that. Bud Bedeker was married to Deborah Padgett for a time. Now, you might remember Deborah Padgett from a whole bunch of big pictures, but I find it kind of interesting that he was married to her. If you want to go onto YouTube, you can see Deborah Padgett doing a dance in a very late Fritz Lang movie from 1959, which was called Der Tiger von Eschnapol. And she's not wearing a hell of a lot when she does that little snake dance in that film. So I just thought I'd throw that in as a side issue as well. Now, Ride Lonesome is the one that people really talk about most of the renowned movies. And it really is a fine Western. I think this is the one that Bedeker really does get everything together in. And it's a fantastic Western. Again, 72 minutes long or so and filmed in 18 days. But the cast is fantastic. You've got Randolph Scott, of course. You've got Karen Steele, who was in a relationship with Bedeker at the time. Pernell Roberts, people remember from Bonanza. What did I say Band stand for? Bonanza. And also Trapper John, M.D., James Best, who people remember playing an idiot in Dukes of Hazzard, I believe. I've never seen it, so I wouldn't know. Playing Billy John, the guy that Ben Brigade, the Randolph Scott character, is taking back for the bounty on him. You've got Lee Van Cleef playing James Best's brother Frank. And you've got James Coburn in his very first film role. And James Coburn does well in this film. In fact, he was quite well served by Bedeker in this movie. This is another of the aspects of Bedeker's films that really is interesting. The fact that he bothers to flesh out the secondary characters, the secondary bad guys, the secondary heroes. Everybody's got their own story and their own little moment to shine. And James Coburn does get that from Bedeker in this film. And it does really serve the movie really well. I love the way that secondary characters aren't just there as placeholders. They've got their own ambitions, their own dreams, their own motivations. And Burt Kennedy and Bedeker really found that a good way to flesh out the small film. These movies, I'm amazed at how small the budgets were, how short the shooting times were, but how they do pack in a hell of a lot, even though they're not fast-paced action films. They do spend time letting the plot grow without forcing it, in a sense. And it just amazes me how that's done. I think the collaboration between Scott Bedecker and Kennedy, for some reason, in some way, allowed that to happen. Now, the storyline, I'll do the IMDb one again. A wanted murderer, Billy John, is captured by Ben Brigade, a bounty hunter, who intends to take him to Santa Cruz to be hanged. Brigade stops at a staging post where he saves a manager's wife from Indian attack and enlists the help of two outlaws to continue his journey more safely. However, the Indian attacks persist. The outlaws plan to take Billy for themselves, tempted by an offer of amnesty for his capture, and Billy's brother Frank is in hot pursuit to rescue him. But Brigade has plans of his own, which he indeed does. And that's one of the more interesting bits about it, the fact that Brigade's plans aren't exactly what people in the movie think his plans are. But his plans do make a lot of sense as we find out more about his life and his past. I'm just going to play a little bit now where Brigade captures Billy, played by James Best.
Morning, Brigade.
Been looking to find you, Billy.
I know. Been seeing your dust for 3 days. I figured it better to let you catch up and have it out and over.
The others, where are they?
Oh, they went on ahead. I told them I'd be along. After I buried you.
Get on your animal, Billy. We're going back.
Now, you know I can't do that.
Only thing you can.
Look, Brigade, if I was to ride south with you, there's them and see me hang.
You left a dead man in the street in Santa Cruz.
A fair fight.
He was killed from behind, like the others.
I don't know how much they're paying you to bring me in, but it ain't enough. Not near enough.
I'd hunt you free. Let's go.
I guess that kind of makes me a liar, don't it? Them boys didn't go ahead. They're scattered all in rocks. No way for you to get out of here. Look, Brigade. I got no quarrel with you. Now, if you was to get on your horse and ride out of here, I'd forget all about this whole thing. Now, look, what's one more bounty to a man like you? Money's got blood on it.
Billy, we're going on back.
You don't understand. I give the word. You're dead.
Maybe, but before I hit the ground, I'll blow you half in two.
You're bluffing.
Am I? Call him off, Billy.
Hold your fire, boy! It ain't gonna work. I knew I should have done it my way.
In the back.
Hey, Charlie! You'll find my brother Frank! You tell him what's happening! Tell him Ben Brigade's taking me to Santa Cruz! You hear me, Charlie? Well, you tell him that! He'll know what to do!
As you can hear from that clip, Ben Brigade is not a nice character. He's a bounty hunter. He's very focused on what he's doing. He's taciturn. He's emotionally stunted. And he is incredibly focused on achieving his goal. Now, we don't find out what his goal is until right near the end of the movie. But it's an important one to him. And it's not the one, as I said, that people are put onto him. Now, like the other renowned movies, it's filmed in the Alabama Hills near Lone Pine in California, just near Mount Whitney, on the west side of the Sierra Nevadas. And again, the landscape is used very well. Brigade rides up to Billy's camp there, and they're in a kind of little flat area among the rocks. And there are a couple of panning shots around the rocks as that gunshot rings out. And you do get that sense of them being enclosed and in a kind of killing ground between these massive rounded boulders that they have in the area. If you go on to Wikipedia and type in Alabama Hills, you're going to see the kind of landscapes we're talking about. They're beautiful. The jagged mountains in the distance, sometimes snow-capped, sometimes not, depending on when they filmed the particular movie. And the rounded, tumbled boulders that litter the landscape, apart from that. And I do really think that filmed anywhere else, these would be very different movies. That harsh but beautiful landscape is just such an important part of these films. Oddly enough, this is also one of one of the renowned westerns where Indians are seen as an enemy in a sense. Even though in Comanche Station they have been kidnapping white women, they're not seen as an enemy particularly in that film. And in Seven Men from Now, the Chiricahuas do attack Stride before the movie starts. Not to kill him, but because they're starving and they steal his horse and eat it. So they're not, in that sense, this is the only one in which they're in any way a threat to the characters. In Comanche Station, they're not particularly. There are some very tight negotiations and very dangerous negotiations that go on between the character in that film and the Indians. But this is the only one where they're really seen as a mortal threat. And that mortal threat is used, A, to get the character played by Karen Steele as a part of the ensemble. Her name's Mrs. Lane. And she, of course, is a source of tension between Pernell Roberts' character, whose name is, he said, looking it up, Sam Boone, and Brigade. Not that Brigade is particularly interested sexually in Mrs. Lane, who later on has found out her husband has been killed by the Indians, but because he feels protective of her, and he's taking her to town, and he sees it as his duty, amongst all the other things he's got to do in taking her to town. The romance relationship is actually between Boone and Mrs. Lane, and not in any way involving Brigade. Brigade is too tied up in his personal tragedy and in his mission for anybody else to be let into that in any significant way. But there are other really interesting bits. Lee Van Cleef isn't in it very much as the brother Frank. He's the one that comes after them, and he and the Indians are pursuing the group as they head into town so that Billy John can be hung for he's shooting a man in the back, as it says in the clip that I played. They're pushing towards something, and Brigade is taking them towards something. He's deliberately chosen the way that he's going in order to take them to a certain place and for certain events to occur. Now, I'm not going to spoil it again and tell you what they are, but they are crucial to understanding Ben Brigade and understanding why he is doing what he does. And they're important to him. It's hard to do this without giving it away. If you see Martin Scorsese's video about this movie, it's going to give away some plot points that are very important, but the movie ends on an incredibly important, iconic image, which really does bring the story of Brigade and this trek across the desert and across this harsh landscape to a close in an emotionally satisfying but not untragic way. This film is really, I think, I'm fairly sure guys would get a lot more out of it than women would, but in that sense, it's not just macho posturing the way that, say, recent Die Hard movies are. There are reasons for the person to be like they are. And I think that's really an important differentiation between a lot of the macho action films we get now and a classic film like this, the fact that the characters are emotionally complex. And all of them in this film, with the possible exception of Lee Van Cleef's character, all of them do have that complexity about them. There's a great scene between Pernell Roberts and James Coburn when Pernell Roberts wants to take Billy so that he gets the reward for him. And so he can start up, go to Mexico and start up a ranch and build a life. And he wants to take his friend James Coburn's character along with him. And James Coburn's character, Whit, is surprised by this. He said, "I didn't know you liked me." And he said, and Pernell Roberts says, "Yeah, we're friends. You're coming with me." That kind of, you know, they've been traveling together for 2 years, and yet Whit didn't know that they were close friends and that their friendship is important. And I found that kind of interesting too, that guy reluctance to talk about emotions but and being surprised by them when they do come out. I really like that. I think it fleshes out those two characters in just about 2 minutes of dialogue in a great way, and it kind of instills an importance to these characters that even though Randolph Scott and Karen Steele's characters are the focal point of a lot of the film, the fact that, you know, the seventh down the list actor still gets that moment to shine, and James Coburn does show that. He's not the suave, matured, slick James Coburn we know from movies of a decade later. But he does show a good jobbing actor's charisma, and he's quite likable in this film as well. But it's a kind of role that in the hands of another director at the same time doing the same kind of big picture, there wouldn't be the nuance to it that there is in this film. And that also helps the movie travel along. While, as I said, the plot reveals itself at a leisurely pace, even though it is a fairly short film, and yet they've still got time for those nice grace notes of character that give us even though this is a very kind of abstracted genre, the Western, those little grace notes of character give it a reality and a weight that it might not have had in other circumstances. So, Bodica was great at that, and I think Burke Kennedy particularly cared a lot about character in these films. They weren't just cardboard cutouts that you put into certain scenes to fulfill certain functions. And, yeah, it's a very fine Western. And the ultimate rationale for Ben Brigade being who he is and doing what he does is a slight surprise, but it's very, very right. There is that sense of, yes, I understand now, and yes, this is what he would do. And I think that's of great credit to Randolph Scott as an actor, Bud Bedeker as a director, and Burke Kennedy as a writer. That lightning in a bottle of these three guys getting together and making films, and particularly Right Lonesome. The biggest thing that pisses me off about this whole Randolph Scott Western thing is that it's taken me so long to discover them and appreciate them. If you haven't seen them, I recommend them. Even if you're not particularly a Western kind of person, check them out. There is a Bud Bedeker collection of 5 of these films, and the other 2 you can find on torrents and by other means if you want to. But they're fine westerns, they're fine films, and they do show, if you're interested at all in the mechanics of making films, how you can do really interesting things on really small budgets if you have the right people together, you think it through, you have a good script, and you have some decent locations and some good actors. B-movies, so many movies are made now, particularly for television. And I'm thinking more along the lines of Sci-Fi Channel things and the Asylum films, where they're made about the same shooting schedules as a Boetica Western, and yet they're not anywhere near as good. Even though they've got to hit certain notes with monsters and things like that. I think there is a place for small films with great characters telling action stories. And these movies were accessible to kids as well. I mean, the kids can see them at a certain level. But there's a level underneath that that adults get. And I do really like that in these films. I treasure them now. They're probably my biggest... They're going to be my big discoveries of viewed for the first time films in 2013. They are fantastic movies, and I'm not going to, they're again in that really weird kind of film for me where I like the film so much, I don't want to watch them too often so they don't become ordinary to me. And I think that that's where I'm going to place these films, in that kind of mental category of really good films I don't want to spoil by watching too much. So that's about it for the two movies, Seven Men from Now and Ride Lonesome. I'll be back and I'll do some feedback. Oh yeah, one more thing on Boetica Westerns. And I thought I'd recognize this when I saw it. Part of Django Unchained was filmed in the Alabama Hills where Bud Boetica did his Westerns. The bits at the start with those rocks where Django's into the chain gang were filmed around the same places where Randolph Scott and all those guys filmed as well. So I thought I'd seen some Boetica homages in Django Unchained, but they're definitely there. And I think it's kind of cool. But anyway, another break and then back for the feedback.
Blazing saddle, he wore a shining star. His job to offer battle to bad men near and far. He conquered fear and he conquered hate. He turned dark night into day. He made his blazing saddle a torch to light the way. Outlaws rule the west and fear filled the land. A cry went up for a man with guts to take the west in hand. They needed a man who was brave and true, with justice for all as his aim. Then out of the sun rode a man with a gun, and Bart was his name. Yes, Bart was his name. He rode a blazing saddle, he wore a shining star. His job to offer battle to bad men near and far. He conquered fear and he conquered hate. He turned dark night into day. He
That, of course, was Frankie Lane with Blazing Saddles. That's just a reminder for me, too, that there is a theme song at the start of Seven Men from Now, I should warn you, and it's pretty bad. but get past it, maybe fast forward through the credits, and then watch the movie, because the theme song, which pretty much every Western at the time had to have, is really hydrogen sulfide. So that's just a warning. Now, I didn't get any formal voicemails or emails about this one. Shame on you guys and ladies. But I did get a little bit of Facebook messages from Morris and a couple of other people just saying that they liked the little bit I wrote from the introduction to the Work in Progress novel. So thank you for that, guys. And book. What am I saying? It's now early in the morning. It's 7:50 a.m. on a Sunday. So if my words don't come out right, that's the reason why. And I haven't had coffee yet. So I would like more feedback. So you can send the voicemails through, send the emails through. I'd be very happy to get them. Facebook's a little more problematic with feedback because it's harder to collate it. You've got to grab the little bits that people put in and put them into a text document and things like that. So the preference is emails or voicemails. But if you still feel you wanted to do the feedback through Facebook, do it. But I'll just have to be start a text file or something like that and cut and paste what people say into that text file. So that's about it for this time around. Next fortnight, we're going to have a very special episode of the Martian Drive-In Podcast with Nick Sauer, where we're talking a couple of superhero movies, the specials, and also Mystery Men. Nick's been reading the Mystery Men comic books, which he can talk about a lot more than I can because I haven't read them yet. But we'll be there and with our capes and our masks on and just grooving through a couple of kind of semi-forgotten superhero movies from around the turn of the millennium. So that's about it. Enjoy your movie watching over the next month until there's another Paleo Cinema podcast or until you check out The Martian Drive-In in a fortnight. And I'm going to be back then with something new. I'm going to try to... I'm not sure what I'm going to do, really, but I'm going to try to dive back. Maybe we'll find something from the 40s and groove on some 40s wonderfulness. So anyway, take care of yourselves. Look after each other, and I'll be back soon.